Welcome, everyone, to this episode of the Orville Universe Podcast. Today, we are talking about Orville, Season 1, Episode 3, About a Girl.
Right after this. Welcome to the Orville Universe Podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
I'm Matthew Westfox.
What's up, Matthew Westfox?
Not much. It's been a good day, and looking forward to... This is the episode we're getting into now that really made me think, okay, this is a show I want to pay attention to, so I'm looking forward to diving into it.
Yeah, this episode I love, and this is definitely the one that awakened me to loving this show, and probably maybe still my favorite episode of this show.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so complex, like emotionally and... Uh-huh. Ethically, like I really, really love all the, this one's I think going to be an ethics heavy episode, but I also really, I'm just like a geek out front. Like I love, I guess, spoiler alert for this episode. I love that they lose, that our heroes lose in this episode.
Yeah, I think so. And I think when the episode first happened, I loved a lot of it, but it also made me nervous because I felt like this episode is raising so many really important questions, and it's doing things that should have really lasting, serious results. And one of the things that I'm sometimes frustrated by on Star Trek, less so with Deep Space Nine, but especially with the other shows, is sometimes our characters would go through pretty emotionally harrowing experiences, and then at the end of the episode they would all say, okay, well, that's happened, and then the next episode we would just never hear about that situation again. And I think the thing that made me really sort of retroactively almost really love this episode even more than I had is the fact that, you know, one of our main characters, Bordas, has had this really difficult situation involving his child and involving his husband, Clyton?
Am I saying that right? Yeah, Clyton,
right. And at first, because that was my concern, was I was like, are we just going to say, okay, that's over and done with and forget about this? But instead, at least once a season now, and I think actually even more than that, this issue has come back up. Not in a let's talk about that actual issue directly again, although that sometimes happens, but even more, this issue has caused ongoing tension between Bordas and Clyden that then plays out again and again in Clyden's jealousy about Bordas and Bordas's feelings of lacking attraction to Clyden and needing, you know, feeling tension in their relationship. And I just, that to me, like we talked about universe building and how much we love continuity, that made me so happy because they said this major issue has gone on both with these two people, but also in the Mocklin homeworld, and it's continuing to have reverberations throughout the show.
Yeah, it's that amazing character development. There are shows that do a good job of developing the universe and developing. I think of Stargate SG-1. Do you ever watch that?
I have not, no.
It does a really fun and good job of building out a universe, like the races and the way they interact and the things that have consequences across, you know, seasons. But the characters are pretty static.
Yep.
This does a great job of not only that world building, which I got from even the first couple episodes, I felt like, oh, this is really cool. I like the union and, oh gosh. I can't remember Bordas's people. What are Bordas's people?
Oh, the Mocklins.
Mocklins, gosh. The Kalon, the Mocklins, the Union. Like, it feels like Star Trek in that way. But then this episode, and like you said, subsequent episodes about this sort of rift in their marriage that is sort of continues, is so character. There's so much character development surrounding that.
Yeah. And let's... I said on the episode we did last time about episode 2 that felt to me like the worst best kind of Star Trek episodes, you know, where it was like Star Trek does these things where it raises an issue, but it's kind of ham-fisted. And I sort of had a like, oh, that's cute. You're doing Star Trek and making all the same mistakes Star Trek had.
Yeah.
This to me felt like it was mirroring the best of Star Trek. And so that's, I think,
Absolutely. Another
where I was like, okay, not only are they just going to do the clumsy, ham-fisted stuff, but they're sometimes going to really nail it.
Yeah, man. I'm 100% with you. on that. The emotional complexity of this episode and the ethical complexity and the way they build on it, something that I think Star Trek does, maybe even more so in the newer Trek, which is kind of a shame, thinking of like Discovery and things like that. The ethical or moral question at hand is one thing, and it doesn't really develop as the episode goes on. It doesn't really raise more questions. It's more like, let's look at this one issue from all sides. And that was what they did here. But I guess the way they brought in different sides of the issue, at first it was all about sort of cultural sensitivity and putting our norms on the Mocklin culture.
Right.
And is it okay to fight for the rights of this baby that it should have in our culture, in their culture? And that's the two sides of the issue at the beginning. But then they bring in the Rudolph storyline, which when I first watched this episode, I was like, that episode was amazing, except that weird Rudolph joke. I didn't like the Rudolph joke. I thought it was dumb.
Yeah.
On a rewatch, I loved it because it's talking about the power of story. And the power, and all throughout, everyone's kind of aggressively arguing with Bordas. And then his friends come to him and say, hey, let us show you a metaphor for what you're going through. And they come to him as sort of a different angle. And they're clearly trying to do that. But it's so funny because they're sort of emotionally competent in a way that everyone else is intellectually competent on the show.
Yeah.
And they bring that up to him, and then suddenly he's on the other side from his mate, and that raises a whole different host of issues.
Yeah, I think the way that they complexify all of that is just really impressive, especially in, as you said, it becomes a cultural sensitivity issue, and it also becomes a kind of like a cultural imperialism issue, because the way that, and I think we'll get more into this in a bit, but there is, especially, I work a lot in nonprofits, and there are times when you might, as one culture, see something in another culture that you think is wrong and want to try and stop it. But the way you do it can be incredibly patronizing or imperialistic, or like, you know, we are more advanced than you. We know better than you. You need to change to do what we think you should do. And there's an extent to which that's the way a lot of the Orville's cast, the crews, attempts to win in court play out at first, until they really are able to switch and say, let's go by, let us show you that by your own values, by your own ideas, maybe this isn't the case. And I wanted to dive more into that, but let me actually start, let's just take a moment and say, other than this kind of main issue about Bordas and the child and all that and the gender issue, what did you have any thoughts on other parts of the episode?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the meat of it, but I just enjoyed a lot of it. I really liked, I liked the dancing bandito.
Yes.
It was silly. It was silly AF, but it was great.
It was one of those moments where I felt like, and again, I know I keep talking about this in relation to Star Trek, but it's so clearly there. I had that moment. I saw that moment and I was immediately like, why did no one on Star Trek ever do this? Because if you had a holodeck, of course you would like want to play out the exact historical scenario, but of course you'd also want to screw around with it. Like, that to me seems so natural and so real. And so the idea that they like, you know, that he like that he made this dance off in an old Western, it made me so happy.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
The other thing that really stuck out for me, and this is more of a negative, and I'll admit it's an ongoing concern I have about the show. There's an old kind of format in comedy that takes guys being very creepy in how they hit on women and portrays it as funny, in a way that I don't love, and I've heard a lot of people talk about not loving, because it's both uncomfortable but also kind of normalizes this behavior that really we should be like, this is not acceptable behavior ever.
Right.
And so the way Yoffit hits on the doctor.
Yeah, it was definitely sexual harassment by like,
yeah,
for sure. I did not like that.
Yeah. And it's like, if it had been that one moment, I would have sort of been able to be like, okay, this is a McFarlane thing. But as I'm sure we'll get into in later episodes, later in the season, it is a theme that they keep going back to that I think is to my mind, the kind of biggest misstep that this show has. This one episode we get isn't the worst of it, but I want to just kind of bookmark it because I think it's going to be something we're going to be talking about more.
Yes, I'm sure that we will. I know some of the places you're talking about going forward. And this episode was a little. This episode, it felt like just a sophomoric joke. which I guess it always does in this show, which is, I think, your problem with it, is they don't take his sort of constant advances on her seriously, especially in one future episode that I know you have big issues with, which I'm curious about how that – I haven't rewatched it since I've kind of heard y'all's take on it, and I am interested to see how I'll feel – If I'll completely agree with you on the way that shakes out, because anyway, that's a future episode. But yes, I agree. Showing a jello penis just felt like a weird. That was probably the most McFarlane joke of this entire show so far.
Yeah,
in a show that like it had no.
It did not seem like something that would in any way be acceptable in a modern military, but certainly not in the military of the Orville world.
Right, and from a meta perspective, it had no self-awareness.
Yeah.
A lot of the jokes where he sort of does those sophomoric things, they're in the light of, oh, that was silly, or there's a certain amount of detachment that you can tell the writer has that, like, I know what I'm doing here. They didn't right. seem like they knew what they were doing with that joke.
The one other thing from this episode, that this doesn't bother me, but I just don't quite understand it. Alara is the security officer. She's supposed to be the one running security and keeping everyone safe and beating up people. Why is she also the communications officer?
For some reason, I didn't see that she had... Did she answer a hail or something?
Yeah, well, I think it's actually been on a couple episodes now. She basically plays the, like, Lieutenant Uhura role. Like, she's the one sitting at the panel, you know, saying, like, incoming message from... they aren't responding or that kind of stuff.
Right. I guess my headcanon for that could be that security is responsible for, vetting messages from other ships or somehow...
That could work.
Maybe she's doing, like, cybersecurity to some degree as well. Like, she's taking care of making sure there's not... whatever, some sort of nefarious purpose behind the message or verifying that it's a legit message. Because we've had, you know, last episode, we had a ship hail them, and it turned out it was a fake hail that led them into a zoo. So very possible that maybe this is what she does now. It's part of her job. I don't know.
Okay, that tracks for me and that works. And I know you're kind of one of the kings of headcanon that I know, so I pretty think you could like find a way to solve that.
I've thought about starting a YouTube channel called The Headcanon Avenger.
Nice.
And just like whenever there's like a controversy that everyone's getting up in an uproar about, I'm like, guys, calm down. You can make it work. It just fits this way.
Well, I'm going to write into you on the MCU podcast because I definitely have some headcanon questions about the new Spider-Man movie.
Ooh, interesting.
But so, all right, now let's get into the real meat of this episode, because this is, a lot of these episodes have an A plot and a B plot. This really, once the A plot gets going, it's pretty much the only thing there is, and I think that's good because it's really where the main story should be. I assume most people listening to this have already seen the episode, but for anybody who either just wants to hear us talk about the Orville, even if they don't want to see it, or more likely, if you saw it a couple of years ago and you're interested in our thoughts on it but don't want to go back and you may not remember all the details, the basic idea here is that Bordas and Clyden have had their child, the egg hatched, and as we learned at the end of the last episode, it's a girl. And we have previously been told that this is an all-male society. And what we learn over the course of this episode is that actually females are born to the society from time to time, but that immediately there is a basically gender reassignment surgery that is done to make them into a male. And again, I should say that I'm using incredibly binary language because that's the language of this world that they are in, and I'm trying to use the language that they are using. Obviously, our current understanding of gender is a lot broader, and so you could look at this with a lot more nuances in different ways. I'm just sort of explaining how the plot plays out and the way they are seeing it. But at first, Bordas and Clyden both want to have this surgery done. They ask the doctor. The doctor says, we can't do that. They ask the captain. The captain says, we can't do that, because clearly they think this is morally wrong. And they try to convince Bordas not to. And then, as you said, two of the cast do convince Bordas not to do this by showing him the red...
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Thank you. I haven't been a child in far too long. And the idea being that it shows that the idea that, like, you can be different and Because the idea had been to this point that a woman in the Mocklin society would be such an outcast because of her difference. And this is that Bordas has this huge mind-opening awareness that, wait a minute, even in your difference there can be value, and my child is different but is not bad, and that we should preserve that and honor that. Clyde doesn't want this, and so they go back to Mocklis to have a trial. And in the course of that trial, the Orville cast has a number of pretty clumsy attempts to try to convince them, but then they wind up finding that the best writer in Mocklin society actually is herself a woman. And sort of show this as look, you know, can't you see that women in your society do have value, do have great things? But then in the end, as you said, our heroes, if that's the way you see it, lose, and the court rules that the surgery should happen. The surgery does happen, and in kind of a touching scene, Bordas and Clyden reconnect, and Bordas is still clearly upset about this, but says, now the most important thing is to love our child as he is. So yeah, that's the kind of the main issue. What were your kind of overall thoughts on how this all played out?
I loved it so much. That's my really overall thought. And I loved a lot of the little moments. I ended up really loving the Rudolph thing. And at the end of the episode, it kind of broke me when Bordas puts a Rudolph in his crib.
Yeah.
That really, oh, man. I actually got choked up. And this episode, that, and then the other thing that really stood out is the female character, the elderly female character, who I do not remember her name, but her testimony was also incredibly emotional.
The Mocklin writer, you mean?
Yes, the Mocklin writer.
Yeah.
And her being sort of a real life Rudolph, as it were. I really love the power of storytelling in the Rudolph story. I can't believe the first time I watched it, that was my annoyance with it, because now I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, that's so good.
Yeah. Havina was her name.
Havina. Thank you. And so I love how many ethical issues are tackled here. And
yeah.
What's also interesting is, you kind of currently, ethics and issues around transgender have been in the news and sort of,
mm-hmm.
And it, when this episode occurred, I was like, oh man, they're tackling that. And then they didn't, which I thought was interesting. They used it as a portal of interest, but that's not the issues that they're really tackling in this episode. It's more about cultural sensitivity, like we said. And then once Bordas and Clyden are on opposite sides, it really becomes changing. It's really about the patriarchy, in a very bald sense, really, because it's men saying that a woman's value is less, but then you still have the cultural sensitivity issue and what's best for the child living in this patriarchal society. It's going to live there. So is it better to make it a boy? They do end up winning the moral argument, but there are definitely moments they take the other side of the argument seriously.
I think that's a very good point. I think you're right that I would say that this is an episode that is kind of transgender adjacent. But it does something that I think science fiction can really do sometimes, which is to say, let's take a question from our world, but then throw it into a hypothetical with very different circumstances and ask, how is this different? Because again, we're talking about a world where, you know, the entire race at least claims to be only one gender, but part of what we find out is that that's actually not the case at all. And I did think that in that regard, it was making a more subtle point about transgender and also about intersex people, because you do have, you know, in our modern medical world, you do have people who are born intersex who don't fit neatly into either male or female. And in a lot of cases, there is pretty horrific surgery done to young babies to make them fit into one or the other, and so I do really certainly think it is related to that, and it's related to the issues of kind of forced gender and forced gender change and all the stuff that goes around with transgender issues and the like. But you're right; it winds up much more being about the ways in which one culture when one culture sees something in another culture that they react to as really problematic, and I think we are supposed to, and I certainly I look at the Mocklin Society and I think, okay, this is totally screwed up, and I think we're supposed to, but what I love is that it then says, okay, what happens when you in one society think another society is really broken and you want to change it, and what are the ways you can do that well, and what are the ways you can do it really badly? Because this is what I was kind of mentioning at the beginning. One thing I think is really problematic is when sort of one culture wants to be the white knight and wants to say, oh, that other culture, you know, everything they do is bad. And I'm wondering if you agree with this. I was so uncomfortable with the way – and not uncomfortable in like this is a bad show, but in like this is a really good way of pushing this issue. The way that the Orville crew tries to approach things – first with Bordas and then with at the court, but by showing them examples that have nothing to do with their own culture, like having Alara demonstrate how strong she is in front of first Bordas and then in the courthouse.
Absolutely. And I love that the advocate on the other side kind of owned her in that argument, because she's trying to show, look how impressive this female is, and she's like, yeah, but a male of that species would be more impressive. In that way. And I realize she's kind of making the wrong argument, which I love that. I love that the side that I think we're not fully supposed to think they're wrong. They're just different. And I love that. I love that they embrace the differences, even in this sort of like visceral idea of changing a baby's sex and the devaluation of females. Like that just, you could rewrite this story and make the Mocklins seem like monsters. And they don't do that. They're logical within their system of government. And what it ends up being is this is the patriarchy, and the only way to really make this it's a shame that females have been treated this way for so many generations, but there's not an easy answer for this baby in this moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would push back a bit, because I do think we are supposed to think that the Mocklins are wrong. It's that I think we're not supposed to think they're evil.
Right. No, I agree. I think they're wrong, but they're given a chance to show their own logic. I just mean that they're not monsters is what I was saying. They're definitely, I think, wrong. But what's weird is it's all that Rudolph. It's the Rudolphness of it all that makes them wrong. But the logic of this baby is going to grow up and be shunned. And, you know, one of its parents wants it to have the surgery and one of its parents doesn't. Like, that's not an easy question to answer.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they definitely establish that sort of if you accept the presets of this society, that the society is going to be entirely male and that a single female will be treated horribly and shunned and outcast, then yes, within that moral context, the idea of forcing a child to experience all those horrible things – it sounds really morally problematic, and that's what I kind of mean. Is it seems like to me one of the most important things about, and this is I think if you're talking to like a friend or if you're talking to like a culture, if you're trying to impose your own values on them, it's never going to work. And that's all of the stuff about like as I said about Alara, or like when they try to show how stupid Malloy is. It feels so clumsy and ham-handed, because what they're trying to say is, let us show you how, by our standards, your culture is dumb.
Yeah.
And what I think they both do, both with Bordas, Little Red Riding Hood, with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and then with the larger courtroom culture with the writer, is they're trying to actually – here they're actually trying to listen to the people. Because as you said, like, it's very easy to say – oh, these people have a dumb patriarchal society, so they're just dumb hicks. We don't have to take them seriously. But where I think they are much more convincing is when with both Bordas and the courthouse, they're able to say, okay, we understand your objections. We understand that you are coming from a reasonable point of view based on the assumptions you're making. We're now going to try and challenge those assumptions in the hope that you will also logically come to a different conclusion. And to me, that's just such an important lesson about how you try to convince people and what is the difference between working with someone and talking with someone versus just dictating to them and telling them they're wrong and being morally superior.
Right. This is a problematic issue as well, but this also had me thinking about art. And the greatest writer on their planet is an outcast from society. And how much did that being an outcast actually contribute, that sort of pain and isolation contribute to her being the greatest writer on their planet? And then you look at that and like, this woman has value, and you have sort of through this crucible of this patriarchal society have forced her into a diamond, you know, like maybe she would have just been a normal writer, but because of the sort of pain and isolation that this society has caused her, she has become the greatest writer on their planet. You know, I thought that was an interesting thing they're saying about art and pain. And there's just so many issues on this episode that I can't even like get into them. And one thing we haven't talked about is, Clyden's shame. Clyden, we find out, this is another, like, they step through this episode with revealing different parts of this argument, and one of the things that gets revealed is Clyden was a female.
Yeah.
And Clyden never told his partner, and there's, like, anger that he never told his partner, and it's like, did Clyden had all this shame about it, and that sucks. And then there's the, and so that humanizes Clyden in a way that he's like actually understanding where this baby's coming from. Like,
yeah.
And that he want, like, it humanizes him in a way that makes me kind of on Clyden's side more than I probably would be. Cause I'm like, oh, he actually wants for this child what his parents gave him.
I think you're right. Especially because this is one of the real problems when you talk about like generational changes. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why often older generations are very resistant to change about some of these things. I think what it's never spoken, but I think this is a clearly very unspoken idea, but that's very present, is you're right. Clyden wants this child to be able to have the support and the love that he had that he's afraid he wouldn't have. But on the flip side, if their child stayed female and did have an okay life, now does Clyden feel like his whole life was a mistake? You know, because there's such a, like, if you're saying that it would be wrong to do it to Clyden's baby, does that mean it was wrong to do it to Clyden himself when he was a baby? And I think that's also, again, such a reminder that these issues are so complicated because they're not just... For me, like, if I lived in the Mocklin society, if I was someone who hadn't had a child or hadn't been born female myself, it'd be so easy for me to talk about this completely as an abstract, philosophical, ethical question. But that point with Clyden is such a good reminder of this is a lived reality for many of these people, and you can talk about how much they are all stuck in a bad system, and they absolutely are. But that simply tearing down that system is going to have incredible moral consequences that doesn't mean it's not worth doing, but that it has to be taken into account. And that it makes someone like Clyde not just seem like, you know, a cartoon villain who's just like, I hate women, can't have a woman, but is actually just like carrying his own story in a way that is really personally affected by what's happening here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a further thought on that I'm wondering if you agree, that you thought with, which is that, you mentioned really loving that moment with Rudolph, and where Bordas puts a little doll of Rudolph in with the baby. Maybe I'm headcanoning too much here, but I thought that part of what that was saying was that unlike Clyden, who had not been told this until later in life and been raised to feel like this was a huge shameful secret, that Bordas was planning to tell their child fairly early what had happened and to raise them thinking that this wasn't shameful or bad. Did you get any of that sense out of it?
I didn't take it that way, but I liked that. And I think that is like you're talking about generational change. Bordas is like on the edge of this generational change that he is sort of fighting for. And I not to spoil future episodes, but he definitely like continues to think about these issues going forward. And I think you're right. I think he will tell Topa. I'm not sure, but yeah, I did get that sense, I guess. I did not at the time, but that's a good point.
Especially because it seems like Mocklin children grow up a lot faster. Like, I think last we've seen Topa, he was sort of 8 or 10 years old.
Yeah, I think they jump seasons and he's suddenly a full-grown child or something like that.
I would love to see an episode where they do talk to him about it. Like, I think that would be a really powerful thing.
Yeah, I think we'll get it. I really do. I'm not – I don't I remember there's an episode in, I think, the second season where they deal with these issues again of female Mocklins. But I don't know if they actually talked to Topher or not. I can't remember. But this they go with like the value of difference is the value of diversity is one of the major elements in the story, and the value of females and in general. Those are big issues here. I really loved this made me like the captain maybe more than any other conversation he's had this entire show. He had his analogy about the third leg.
Yeah.
He talks about, if a baby was born in our culture with a third leg, we would remove that leg because we'd consider it a deformity. But there are cultures with three legs, and those three-legged cultures would think that we were wrong. And, you know, and she says, do you really believe that's the same thing? And he says, no, I don't. And he's saying, like, no, I viscerally don't. I viscerally think this is wrong. But right. He says, I'm policing myself. I'm trying to look at it from their perspective. And I thought that's such a good captain thing to do. It's so good.
It is. And that for me, I mean, many of our listeners not know this. I'm a person with one leg. I have an amputation and a prosthetic leg. And I'm also therefore very involved in the disability community. And my disability is not genetic, but certainly this is a very real concern in the disability community today about that sort of as fetal testing gets better and better, are people going to want to sort of pick and choose what babies they have based on whether or not they have certain disabilities? And so I thought that was also a, you know, one more time where they're not diving into it, but they're kind of just like hanging a lampshade on, here's one other way this intersects with a very real issue in our own world. Because I think one of the things that we talk about there all the time is that often we'll hear parents say, I just want to have a normal baby. And so the question becomes, how do you define normal? And what's the sort of ableism of defining a normal baby as not having a certain number of legs or having certain deformities or not? Or, you know, and that normal can be about disability. It can be about gender. It can be about race. It can be about any of these things. And it's, I think, one more way that I think this episode is just it's throwing out all these questions without telling you answers and just saying, we want you to watch this episode and then spend hours debating it and discussing it afterwards, and we're not telling you what you should think about it. And I just think that, to me, is science fiction at its absolute best.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think that's a really good point. I think that might be the most similar analog that we've brought up. We've brought up a lot of little analogs to our real world here. And that argument of what babies do you change? I mean, that seems obvious. I don't know why it took us this long to get there, but you're totally right. Like the disability community or ableism community. I'm not sure what the proper term
disability
is.
Community. Yeah.
Disability community. My girlfriend Alyssa is an occupational therapist, and she deals and works with a lot of, communities with physical and mental, disabilities. And she's often talked about these issues because they're getting to the point where they can test for certain things, then you can just decide not to have that baby. And then it's like, but wait, are those what differences are valuable? You know, like we just said, this episode is about the value of difference and the value of diversity.
Right.
What differences are valuable, and what's a disease to be eradicated? Like,
yeah.
That's not an easy question.
Yeah, no, it really isn't, because it all comes down to these definitions of what is normal and what is not, you know, and just that all the different problems around that. And I have a lot of political thoughts on that I'm not going to get into. I'll just say that I think that often that issue gets sort of talked about as though it's an abortion issue, and I think that it's not in the slightest. That I think that it's the issue is just what are the assumptions people are making about what a normal baby should be. But getting back to the Orville, I think, let me actually ask you this. So what did you think of when the final ruling came as it was? Did it surprise you, and kind of what was your thoughts about it?
It absolutely surprised me. And it, as I've said, I think it's what made me love this show more than almost anything else that's happened so far, at least. And this, even the episode tackling these issues, like the very first, the end of last episode when we find out they had a female baby, I was like, oh wow, they're going with a thing there. And then they start talking about this sort of transgender, gender reassignment surgery. And I'm like, wow, they're going there. But then when they let them lose, I was like, oh, our heroes aren't always going to win on this show. The people that we follow aren't always going to be, they're not always going to be right, and they're not always going to win. And I was like, wow, this is a deeper show than I thought. And it completely shocked me the first time I saw this.
Yeah. I definitely feel that way too, especially because, you know, again, love Star Trek, keep talking about it, but one of the things that sometimes frustrates me about Star Trek, but also about a lot of other science fiction, and that I think has a kind of a deleterious effect, is there's often the conceit in these shows that if you make a logical, well-reasoned, well-thought-out argument, you can convince anybody of anything.
Yeah.
And that the most hateful bigot, the most fearful, paranoid person, whatever it is, if you just make the right logical argument, if you're just smart enough, you can always change their mind. And I've seen a lot of my friends who are very, very activist type people, but also come from that very geeky science fiction background, getting incredibly frustrated about this. And I think a lot of the worst sort of, you know, flame war threads that you see happen is because people are thinking, like, if I just explain this in perfect reasoned logic, of course the other person will be convinced. And the thing is that when you are holding prejudices, when you're holding perspectives, when you're holding hate or fear or just a fundamentally different way of seeing the world, all the logic in the world won't often change that. And that can be so frustrating to people. And I think that's where a lot of internet debates go way off the rails, is people get so frustrated about that and they just start yelling at each other on both sides. And so I really loved kind of pricking that balloon a little bit and showing, like, yes, they made an argument that absolutely logically should have convinced the Mocklins. Like, look, here's our piece of evidence. Boom, game over, we win. But it doesn't work like that. You know, they're combating thousands of years of culture and social programming and this whole larger society that says, you know, even if, like, that some people in the society would say, no, we just still think women are bad and the society should be all male. And others who are thinking, as you said, you're probably right, we probably should change this, but to just force one individual baby to live in our not yet changed awful patriarchal society would be cruel to that baby, so we're not going to do it. And you can disagree with either of those arguments, but the show shows that you can't just change them with logic, and I just love that so much.
Yeah. Or you can't always win by being right, and that's a tough argument. That's a tough thing to take. And also, I just love how it shows so many different sides of the argument. And even when you examine them against current day things, like, you can take all kinds of different stuff away from it that I don't even like necessarily. Like, the union doctor and captain refused to give the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminded me of the whole, like, cake makers debate that we have over in, like, South and North Carolina or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And should a cake maker be able to, like, that's ripped right out of the headlines. And, like, I was like, I don't, like, it was weird to me that they even, like, threw that in and didn't address it in a way that, like, they didn't even really address it. They were just like, oh yeah, we're just refusing. And I was like, should they be able to refuse? And I mean, in a more direct way, talking about, like, right now there's bills talking about, you know, allowing healthcare providers to refuse abortions,
right,
based on their religious conviction. And it's like, that's very much what's happening here. They believe something, the parents believe something different, and these people just say, no, we're not going to do it. And it was like, ooh, that's weird that the show took our main characters and made them so secure on that position and then didn't, I don't know, they didn't question
it.
Yeah,
it's funny. Even as you say that, it's an uncomfortable point, and I want to argue with you, but I think you're right. Because, like, I know in our own world, I absolutely think the baker has to make the cake, and I absolutely think that if you're a doctor, you have to perform those things. And to me, on the flip side, I think that the doctor and the captain have every right to refuse this.
Right.
But I know that is because I feel on some level that what they're asking the doctor and the captain to do is morally wrong, and that there's nothing wrong with what they're asking the baker or the doctor in our own world to do. And you're right, because it's the now where is – and I think you can build an ethical construct in which those things are justified, but what the – That all those people are justified, or that it's okay to say that the abortion doctor and the baker have to do it, but that what the captain and the doctor are doing, to me, it feels fundamentally different. But I also know that so much of that is because of my moral context and how much am I imposing that on others.
Right. It's an uncomfortable moment to realize, like, oh, I'm with them, and then I'm like, oh, am I? I don't know.
Yeah.
This episode has a lot of those moments.
Yeah, and I think I still do come down as being with them, but you're right. It my knee jerk response isn't enough. I need to press that further and to really ask deeper, like, why do I think it's okay in this case but not in the other, and what is the difference? And I think that's another great thing that shows do, is that I think a lot of us, myself included, have what we think of as very well reasoned, thought out ethical perspectives that at the end of the day are just our gut feelings. That just this feels wrong, this feels right, and what I love about ethics is that it pushes us to say that's not good enough. You have to actually come up with a logical ethical system and an emotional ethical system, like not just that logic is the ruler, but that you have to come up with a framework that makes these things fit and realize that sometimes your framework is actually not perfect because it some things don't fit.
Yeah. Another issue that's brought up a lot in this episode is culture versus parental control over a child.
Yeah.
And it's a little different because the two parents disagree on what should happen. But definitely, in the early moments of the episode, it's like, at what point does the culture take over? And this is an issue even all the way down. We've already talked about a few of these issues, but like all the way down to abortion, all the way down. And it's really cultural control over us. And then at what point we have a time to protect versus like it, there's a lot of issues here that I can't even like properly express.
Yeah.
Because there's so much. And this episode's so rich, and I feel like it handles it all well. It doesn't answer everything. It doesn't answer anything, really. It just presents a whole lot of questions,
yeah.
And they're all valuable. One of the things that I think we've talked about a little off-cast, and I've talked about a little on-cast, maybe. I am in the middle of a bit of a sort of ethical change in the way I think, and I've been sort of reanalyzing sort of my religious framework that I've grown up with and all that, and that's one of the reasons I've wanted to do this show, is it's valuable to me. And one of the things that I have been considering lately in what is ethics, what is the deal, like trying to understand it, because the way I was raised is God gives you a rule. And that's the gold standard for that's the thing we all should be doing. And one of the things that I've found recently that I'm considering in my ethical framework I'm building for myself is mm-hmm. that a big part of ethics is just trying to live. It is basically our attempt to live together. Because
yeah.
If you are a good person, people want to be around you. And in many ways, it's about acceptance of others. Now, that doesn't give everything, because there's also something to be said for integrity. And if no one sees you do a bad thing, you still did the bad thing. You shouldn't do that. But anyway, I've just been trying to understand like what ethics even is, and trying to like give myself a framework to try to start building a foundation to try to build out my own thought processes on all this stuff. And one of the things that I've been thinking about is that it's somewhat about keeping peace and living with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think that really works.
Something that it's at least a very small basis for something trying to figure out. And something that of all characters, Malloy said in this episode really got to me. And they were like, if they don't change her sex, would they love her less? And then Malloy says, they'd lose a lot of friends around here if they did.
Yeah.
And it's just like, is that all it is? Is that all this is? It's like in Mocklin culture, you do this because it allows you to be accepted. In our culture, we do this because it allows you to be accepted. And Bordas is caught between these two cultures, and he has having to, for the first time, to decide what he thinks is right and what he thinks is worth fighting for because his two cultures are fighting against each other.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
I think that's a great way of putting it. And I think I'm going to have 2 points. One is that on the ethics issue, I think a lot of what these conversations, I think, lead us to, and I know you and I have talked about this, and I think this episode is another great example of that. To me, the purpose of an ethical moral framework is to provide you with a basis and a background by which you examine new situations and recognize that the individual situations are not going to neatly fit into the rules you have, but that to some extent you have to decide, okay, does this rule more apply or does this rule more apply? And that it's more kind of ethical guidelines. Because I think part of what I know you and I have talked about and that this show really highlights is that there's a danger where your ethical system is just a series of rules. And if you have a situation that's kind of a corner case, you just squeeze it and push it until it fits the rule, and then you apply the rule and you're done. And that so much of what this is about is saying, like, you know, if you build a moral structure based on the ideas of your particular society, once you encounter new situations outside of your culture, outside of your society, you're going to have to adjust the moral rules. Or once if you build a moral system based on the assumption that all babies are born male, and then you start to realize, like, actually a lot more are being born female, we're just hiding that fact through surgery and terrible things like that. Now, how do we change our moral system? You know, and I think I'm glad you brought that point up, because I think that's I think something that, again, good science fiction should do well, is to say, like, what happens when our rules don't quite fit?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's taken to this sort of extreme with it being an alien society. But yeah. In every way, every time we encounter a human being, our versions of ethics and reality are going to bump up against each other. And we have to decide what to take from that other person or in hopefully nonviolent, but all the way from small disagreements to wars, what's worth fighting for in our framework that we think, right, that in our ethics. And there are things we think are worth fighting for, you know, and some of it is, if you trample on my rights or you're going to harm me, yeah, I'll harm you back. But almost all wars, all disagreements, all the way down from, like, you disagreeing with a coworker to you fighting on a battlefield are all just like these different ways that we all think about these things. And how I don't agree that guy should have said that in that meeting, because that's against my ethical thing, you know, like,
right.
But according to him, it is, and it's how do you learn to live at peace with those people? And at what point should you fight those people? And at what point should you stand? And at what point should you change? I love this show.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think it is just it just raises so many interesting things like this. And I'm kind of going back a bit. I'm stuck still on that question you raised about, like, why is it okay to say the baker and the doctor have to do the things in our world, but that the captain and the doctor in this world don't? And I think, to me, where I think I'm kind of going back on this, and it maybe doesn't need to have gone over, but I want to
the
way I would approach it, which is that if you are signing up to run a business in our society, you have to follow the dictates of our society and what our society has said is that we have said you're running a commercial establishment that's open to all, that you're a doctor, you literally take a Hippocratic oath that says you will take care of all those in need. I think where it gets much more complicated is that, you know, in that world, the captain and the doctor have taken their own oaths based on the moral understanding of the system of the union. And now they're experiencing something from completely outside of that. But then actually, I'm going to go back and say that most bakers opened stores 50 years ago where being gay was outside their moral framework because of how limited they were. So
right.
This is why the show is so good, because it pushes us to figure this out more.
Yeah. And I would say within that, exactly what you're saying is exactly what we're coming up against in our society right now. Our society has not fully agreed that I'm with you. I've agreed being gay is fine, Being gay is great. Be yourself. But our society has not fully agreed with that yet, unfortunately, for what we believe. But there is, and this is what I'm talking about, all these levels of conflict. And right now, the political one is the people on this side believe that that is against their moral framework to make a cake for someone.
Yeah.
Because they're supporting something that they see as evil by supporting a gay marriage. And they believe that, and as an artist, when I think about the cake maker story, for instance, as an artist, which I don't know what this person thinks of themselves as, but
right.
You know, depending on, and I guess it kind of depends, or maybe it doesn't. Like, as an artist, if someone asked me to write a song and they'll pay me to write a song about a thing that I'd completely disagree with, I would turn that down.
Right.
So, like, I not to support the whole anti-gay of it all, I'm not on board with that, but I also see the point of having a little freedom in that situation where if you're morally opposed to something, you shouldn't have to take part in it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man, this
podcast is not the place for it. On that, I fundamentally disagree with you, but I understand where you're coming from, and I think it's one of the reasons why this show is good, because it raises those questions and lets us kind of look at it from a completely different light.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, that's, I gotta say, I disagree this podcast isn't the place for it. I would love to have that conversation. but I know we're running up on time at this point.
Yeah.
And that's a big conversation. But, the thing that I would say about, I don't agree that this person should do that. What I think should happen is probably what happened to some degree. It probably happened on both sides, is someone should say, "Hey, this guy did this thing. We should not support his business anymore." You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It should be something that the society decides, "Oh, this is not okay that you did that. You can do what you want with your business, but we're not going to support you if you do that."
So I hear that. It's funny. I was actually listening to a debate about sort of the how segregation was fought, was done, and that there was someone was making a similar point about like lunch counters, and that there should have just been, you know, punish the people who have segregated lunch counters or other businesses with boycotts and things like that. And the problem for me there is that, and you're right, we should wrap this up. I just make this counterpoint, and then we can kind of move on. Or if you want to respond, go ahead, and then we can move on.
You're but like, let me make my point, and then we'll be done with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you made your point, but yeah, no, exactly. I just remembering how many times in the MCU cast you had said, like, you don't want to get political, and so
no, as
long as you're okay with us diving deep, that's fine.
Sort of specifically on the MCU cast, because it's kind of a thing for everyone, and I'm sort of doing this show partially to dive into all these things and talk about them with someone who I disagree with. I'm sure we will disagree, and I like that.
Yeah.
And I like that we can challenge each other with logic. Like you said, you can't convince anyone with logic, but you can have these conversations, especially in a friendly way like this. I love this. This is my, this
yeah,
is my
we
jam.
Have fun and respect for each other and where we're coming from. And as we said, we both agree that we can present each other the most perfect, logical, reasonable argument, and it may not convince the other one.
And you're already you've already made me feel bad about my argument by comparing it to racial integration.
Yeah,
like
let me just make my point there, because my point isn't to make you feel bad, but just to offer another way of saying it. The reason why that wouldn't work is that, like, if these things are being used against oppressed communities, like gay community or black community or whatever, or women, generally those are also the communities that don't have as much economic power. Like, if all the black people in a southern town had said, "Okay, we're not going to eat at this particular restaurant anymore," the restaurant would be like, "Okay, who cares?" Like, you don't. They didn't have the economic power, you know. And even in places like Montgomery, with the bus boycott,
yeah,
you know, even that, like, it stung the bus company and it hurt the bus company, but that was also because that was a very specific industry that was meant to cater to the most low-income folks, and I think that's much more the exception than the rule. And so my only point there is that I think, and again, we're now getting way past the podcast itself, and so I want to make another point to bring it back to that.
Right.
But that I think the idea of, you know, let the Because let's be honest, if the baker is in a small town in a rural area and set where most of those bakers are going to, you know, a baker who says in the middle of New York City, I'm not going to make a cake for a gay couple, yeah, that person's going to be out of business in 2 weeks. But frankly, that person probably never opens the business there. Like, right. It's more about the gay couple in the rural community where there may be one of two or three gay couples in the, or you know, four or five gay people in the whole community. And now it's like, you know, them trying to use economic power to punish that baker is just not viable.
Right. And I think that given the framework that I just mentioned about how like ethics is working with other people, I don't know if I think it's the government's place to tell the rural people they have to get. Well, I don't know. It is. It definitely is. It definitely is in some cases. But the problem with it's that whole. I think it's the arc of history is long and it tends toward justice.
Yep.
The thing is, the arc is long and it sucks. And we can push, but we also have to respect the rights of people that disagree with us. And like, you know, or we'll end up with in war. I mean, like that's, so like you have to somehow figure out a way to balance, existing alongside others and respecting their freedoms while pushing for justice for all. And it's not an easy thing to do. And I'm a bit of a devil's advocate, so I don't even necessarily disagree with you that the idea that you should force people that are have a publicly open thing to serve everyone. I'm not totally opposed to that, but I also see it from the other side. Maybe it's from where, maybe it's because I am from Alabama.
And I think, as I said, you know, and I know in my past I was definitely that person who was just like, you know, oh, people from the South are hicks and they're stupid and we don't, you know, we shouldn't convince them. We just got to go in and tell them that they're wrong and they'll listen. And I think I was very – part of why I so love the plot point of like how badly Kelly tries to just tell the Mocklins they're wrong is because I was absolutely that person. You know, and I think you're right that you do have to understand where someone else is coming from. You know, on my own podcast, Superhero Ethics, and you've commented on this, that it's a good thing, and I think a lot of us, it's what I love about it. We probably talk more about villains than heroes, because the characters we most talk about are the villains who, where we sort of see their point, you know, like, I remember after the Black Panther movie came out, I made a point not to contribute to these conversations much, because I think they were much more conversations within the black community, but I really liked listening to them, is there's a lot of people I hear who are saying, you know, Killmonger had a point. Like, Killmonger really had some good points and some good critiques. And maybe you are critical of his methods and maybe you're not, but that he had some good points. And I think that way of approaching things makes so much more sense.
Absolutely.
The last thing I would say to pull it back to the Orville itself, because, you know, as you said, the great thing about this argument is we can find the actual core rationale behind the things we believe. And maybe this is because we're doing a great job of pushing our own ethical systems, or maybe I'm just searching for a justification for my gut instinct. I don't know. But I think because the way you kept saying about freedoms, I think the other difference here is the baker and the doctor have entered in our society, have chosen to go into the public sphere and to say, I want to run a business or to provide a service in the public sphere. And so the question, you know, and we already do place limits. Like we say, you know, you don't have the freedom to hire a 12-year-old child to work in your business. You don't have the freedom to, you know, pump out toxic gases out of your baking oven. I don't think there's a way that could happen, but, you know, like, there are limits we already put on. The difference, I think, for the characters in the Orville is it's not that, like, let's say Bordas had come to them and said, I want to have this surgery on myself. And it was a surgery that was like, you know, that the Mocklin culture, let's say, believed that if you lost a battle, you had to have one of your arms cut off. The doctor and the captain would probably think this was a horrible cultural idea. But there, I think you're probably right that they should be forced to be legally compelled to carry out that surgery. You can go a lot deeper that maybe I'm looking at that wrong.
But I think I would absolutely think Claire would refuse that surgery and that the captain would probably support her. And I think that that's actually less morally, because even though it's him making a decision about his own body, which obviously that's rife with a lot, we could go get a whole other issue. It's also like them supporting sort of a self-harm.
Right.
That, you know, like that's a whole tricky issue, man. That should be an episode. You just wrote an episode.
I guess what I'm saying is that I feel like there's, you know, you're against the forcing. I need to think more about that specific situation. I just came up with it now, but I think I'd be okay with this, with the saying, if you've agreed to do, because you're imposing your morals on someone else. I think the reason why the captain and the doctor's objections are valid here is that they are being asked to perform a surgery on a third person who is not in any way consenting and doesn't have the ability to consent, namely the child.
Right.
There, I think that's why I feel like it's a difference between the baker, because you're now asking them to me, there's a basic, you know, principle of, you don't, you know, the doctor probably has a basic principle of, I don't ever conduct a surgery on someone else without their consent.
Yeah.
And it's that the baby can't consent in any way. That's, to me, why it feels like that's a more justifiable objection.
Yeah, I think that's a fair framework. But then that comes into the question of, and we already mentioned it, but like, how much does culture get to decide and how much does a parent get to decide? How much as a parent do you have control over your children? And obviously we have boundaries in our culture for that. Again, you mentioned
right.
working, abuse, like we have boundaries, murder, we have boundaries for what we can do to our children. But we don't, it's hard to say where those boundaries stop exactly, especially when you encounter a different culture like this.
Yeah.
There's a great line. Do you like Hamilton?
Oh yeah, love it.
I love Hamilton so much. I got to see it in New York. It was amazing. But there's a line in there that I love, and it relates to this. Hamilton is speaking to Washington, and Washington's the president. He's trying to convince them that they need the federal bank or whatever. And Hamilton says, he says, you need more votes. And Hamilton says, we need bold strokes. And then Washington said, you need to convince more folks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such a good, I love Washington's sort of, the way he looks at that. Like, we do have to, and that's where we are in this culture on a lot of these issues. In our culture today, we are in
right.
a place where we all want to just scream at each other, but we have to convince each other. We do. I know we can't just do logic, but we do have to have the arguments and have the discussions with other people in a way that respects their opinion and their freedom and their whatever, like respects them as autonomous beings that also have half of the society that we all have to figure out how to work together to come up with laws that are fair for everybody. And, and we don't do that. We generally just demonize the other side and yell at each other.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. And I, it's why I like that this episode could so easily been having the Mocklins be made out to be mustache twirling, horribly patriarchal, awful sexist bastards. And by making their culture seem reasonable within its own assumptions, even though we think those base assumptions are horrific, it makes them much more relatable, and it makes them, I think, still kind of the villains of the story, but in that much more Killmonger, you know, Magneto kind of a way.
Well, here's what I think it does. I think it makes the Mocklin culture out to be a villain, but there's no specific Mocklin that's a villain.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
That's what I think is true of all of these arguments, of all the people that disagree. Most of the time, we can disagree great on culturally, but most of the time, all the individuals in those cultures are working with their own set of assumptions, and they're just different from us. And we have to learn to reach across and go, here's how you were raised, here's how I was raised, we're different, but where can we find that common ground, and how can we come to some sort of consensus that makes us all happy or all unhappy, as most compromises do. There were two moments I really wanted to bring up from this episode that I just really loved. And that's not only the moment at the end when Clyden and Bordas are giving their baby the Rudolph. It was really touching to me because Bordas said he's going to try to make it work with Clyden because he loves him.
Yeah.
It rang very true to me and very sweet that even though they just went to court over their child. You know, that's a big deal. That's a big emotional deal for both of them. And Bordas just stood against his own culture. But him and Clyden are still holding each other at the end, going, we're going to try to make this work. We have a baby. We love each other. And that goes, that's going to continue throughout these seasons. And I just loved that sort of, that weight that they put on their relationship.
I think that's a really, really good way to look at it. Especially because, you know, as I said, I feel like they could have gone in one of two ways. They could have gone in two different ways, both of which would have been bad to me. One of which would be to say, okay, this happened. They're going to break up. The marriage is over. They never want to talk to each other again. Which I think would be a very understandable situation and certainly does happen a lot when there's a major conflict over a child or something like that. I used, as I said, I work in this area and I know, unfortunately, divorce rates of parents of children with severe disabilities can often be, or where there's been some kind of like, you know, fetal loss of some kind can be very high because of the conflict it can cause when there's a disagreement there about how to handle something. But that certainly many couples do find a way to work through it. And that, to me, that was such a great example of what, it's interesting because so much of this show is about Kelly and I can't remember, what's the captain's name?
Captain Mercer.
Mercer. Yeah, I mean, he's the captain is his name.
The captain. Let's call him the captain.
But like, you know, so much of the show is about Mercer and Kelly's relationship. And again, showing that like, it's not just, it starts out with just, we hate each other. You cheated on me. You abandoned me. But it's complexifying their relationship in so many ways. And it's doing the same with Clyden and Bordas. It's showing that like you can have a major conflict, a huge fight, a huge disagreement, but your love for each other is still there. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that they're not just like letting them fall apart, but also, as I said, that they're not just saying we had this big fight, but we love each other, so now everything is fine. That it continues to be a point of stress in their relationship. And that's just so often on television, especially on Star Trek or like early science fiction television, either you're totally in love or you hate each other. And sort of show this nuanced relationship of, you know, there's that phrase I like a lot that says that like, you know, that sometimes when people who love each other are fighting, you'll say something like, I don't like you very much right now. I love you, but I don't like you very much right now. And that's to me, it's a moment of being able to say like that deep love can survive the fight you're having in the moment. Not always, and sometimes it shouldn't, but that it can. And that's to me what happens with Clyde and Bordas is them being like, we've had this huge fight and this huge fight is not over and it's going to keep having reverberations and it may damage our marriage in the future. But for now, we're really going to try because we do love each other and we love this child.
Yeah, man, it's great. The other thing that I wanted to mention was, it's just my favorite line from the episode. And I think it had a meta context as well as what she's saying. When Havina is giving her testimony and you find out that she is the greatest writer on their planet, she says, there are many ways to contribute to society, advocate. This was mine. And I thought there was a bit of a meta context for that, that her standing there sort of fighting for her gender was also part of how she's contributing to society. And I really liked that. Just as is just a beautiful line. It was beautiful in the sort of direct context of, I contributed to society in a way that is not just about my strength, my physical strength. I contributed intellectually. But then it also was me standing here before this court. This is how I contribute to society. I thought that was really touching.
I agree. I don't think I could say this about all the Orville episodes, but I could say it about a number. But this one especially is one I think I could watch it four or five times. And I might say this time I'm just going to focus on the relationship between Bordas and Clyden. This time I'm going to watch it and really just focus on, like, we could do five podcasts. We're not going to, listeners, I promise. But, like, we could do a number of different episodes just talking about, you know, the way the crew handles it or the courtroom scene. Or like, because there's just so much going on in this episode.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this is by far so far our longest episode. And I don't mind because I think this is this episode is why I love this show pretty much. And it's also one of the major ones that I was honestly scared to tackle because I think some of the issues are rife in today's culture. Yeah. And we've already gotten on a lot of political topics that, like you said, I don't cover on other podcasts. But because the truth is, I'm a moderate and there's no place for moderates in this world right now. It's really hard to be sort of like, oh, I see both sides on that issue. And then you just are immediately hated by both sides.
Yeah.
It's tough. You know what?
And I think that that's, I remember when we first talked about this podcast, that because I am, as anyone who's listened to Superhero Ethics, but also just probably you can tell just from the first couple episodes we've done, I am not a moderate. I am a, you know, dyed-in-the-wool, proud social justice warrior, raving progressive. but I think that there's a really interesting discussion to be had between those two perspectives about, and then I think over the course of this podcast, you know, the hardcore conservatives are probably not going to find much to like on this podcast. That's, I mean, hopefully they still like the discussions, but obviously the discussion here is between, you know, moderate and leftist. But right. But I think that there's still so much room in there between those perspectives that we should be considering and should be talking about.
Absolutely. And I also grew up very conservative. That's the culture I grew up in. And to the point that I will probably defend those positions, even the ones I don't agree with. So, like, if there's, we'll probably have discussions that, honestly, I'll probably be frustrating because I can be a real devil's advocate, and it just sometimes I come off as a dick because I'm like, no, but you're, you can't say that because I go to therapy sometimes, and my therapist, I find myself anytime he says a definitive statement. I am really bad with definitive statements. If my therapist says a definitive statement, I'm immediately like, well, yes, but
so you're not a devil's advocate, you're just a contrarian.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm a contrarian.
You and I should have we'll probably do a full episode just on like ethical conversations around the show, because I think the devil's advocate perspective, I think, can sometimes be very harmful, but sometimes useful.
Well, this is a really fun conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been a really complicated issue, but I'm glad we dove into it, and I'm really looking forward to what our listeners have to say about it. Thank you so much, and look forward to the next one.
All right. Peace.
And just remember, in space, every Western ends with a dance-off.
Thanks for listening to the Orville Universe podcast. If you'd like to hear more from Matthew Westfox, search your podcatcher now for the Superhero Ethics podcast. If you'd like to hear more from me, Matthew Carroll, search your podcatcher for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast and the Star Trek Universe podcast. Or you can check out my music. Just search for Matthew Carroll wherever you listen to music.